this, the May 10th, 2009 Mother's Day edition of Forward Forum. John Quinlan here with
Stephanie Woods.
And should have a very interesting discussion coming up in the next hour about a really compelling issue. We're going to find out a little bit how we got to this place and how we can turn things around. But at a time when, you know, of course, all kinds of economic distress out there.
Such a great time for this to be happening.
Yeah.
Housing crisis during the crisis of everything else that's going on.
And the specific issue we're going to be talking about is some potential immediate danger to the security of nonprofit housing options in the Madison and Dane County communities. And we have a great panel that will be joining us in just a second. We have Linda Ketchum here from Madison Urban Ministry, Steve Ryden and Jason Glozier from the disability rights group ADAPT, and Michael Bassford from Housing Initiatives. And they're going to be joining us to tell us a little bit about things that are happening. Before we get into that, I just want to fulfill a promise here. And
shout out a happy Mother's Day.
Of course. Happy Mother's Day to everybody out there. And Linda, especially, thanks for joining us today.
On Mother's Day.
You have your celebration coming up in just a little bit later this afternoon. You were telling me that's good. But something dear and near to a lot of moms out there who have been advocates in our community and, you know, want same things for all families that their family has, which is, among other things, a secure place to live. So, hey, directly resonant with the day.
Absolutely.
And just real quick, you have some plans for your mom?
My mother's coming up from Chicago. Hopefully she'll make it.
Okay, so you got a celebration coming up.
Yes, she is taking the public transportation. She'll be arriving on the Van Gelder, hopefully, any day now.
Yeah.
Hopefully today.
Well, you know, this is, I think, seventh Mom's Day since my mom passed away. But I have a little ritual that I do, a chance to kind of remember her and read some of the stuff she wrote and think about the trip to India we took and a few other things. So that'll be happening later on
today. Your ritual?
Oh,
later on today.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. But anyway, it's an important day for all of us. And also to remember all those great surrogate moms that are out there as well.
Oh, yes.
Well, hey, we do have an announcement I do want to bring to people's attention. I think we mentioned this last week, and that is the Celebration of Leadership event that's coming up next Saturday. That's the Gay-Straight Alliance for Safe Schools that puts on this annual event. And it's just a wonderfully inspiring evening to hear about the stories of young people out there that are making a difference in terms of advancing diversity in schools, both large and small, throughout Wisconsin. Some of the adult leaders, including teachers, that are advocating for them. You know, for me, I think it's one of the most inspiring evenings of the whole year. And that's coming up this Saturday, May 16th. And people can find out more by going to the website of Gay-Straight Alliance for Safe Schools, which is just gsaforsafeschools.org, or they can call 661-4141 for more information.
Will you be there?
I will be there.
Okay, then. You're always doing something around the town. You're always busy.
So, and speaking of something around the town, probably a good way to kick off this show, again, talking about this potential crisis that's upon us in terms of nonprofit housing, is to talk about an event that is coming up on Tuesday. Again, we'll have a chance to fill in how we got to this point and some of the other stuff. But Michael Bassford, do you mind maybe just filling us in on that and telling us a little bit about the event that's coming up?
Great. Yes, and thank you to both of you for having us on today. What we'll be having is a rally at the state capitol on Tuesday at noon at the King Street entrance. This will be a rally to tell the governor and to tell the state legislature that the recent interpretation change in the Wisconsin statutes that threaten to put low-income housing, affordable housing for low-income people and families. The changes that they're going to subject these properties to property taxes has to be changed, and it has to be changed right now. We're facing a crisis situation as municipalities are starting to tax and get the assessors involved in their communities to start taxing these properties that agencies like mine, Housing Initiatives, have used for decades to develop affordable housing for people.
All right. Hey, well, before we get started, let me just more properly let each of you introduce yourselves and the work that you do with different organizations. We should say that you're all here as part of kind of an ad hoc coalition that's come together to organize this Tuesday event. But, Michael, I want to start with you again, Michael Bassford, and you're with a group called Housing Initiatives. Could you tell us a little about the mission history of that group?
Absolutely. Housing Initiatives started in 1993, and since then, with the mission of providing housing for homeless people and families who also suffer from severe mental illnesses. We house about 200 people throughout Dane County, mostly through funding provided by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development. We also own 51 rental units throughout Madison, and all of those units are affordable for clients who are homeless when they enter our program. And what we do is we house them, and they, no matter what their income is, don't have to pay more than 30% of their income for housing.
So if they're not making any money,
then their rent is zero.
And how do they get to the point, or how do you guys help them? Maybe do you help them get jobs, or is it just the housing? How does that work?
Our focus is to get people into housing. The big challenge for a lot of people, especially those with mental illnesses who are on the street, is that they don't have access to services and they don't have access to their benefits, mm-hmm. that they have the rights for. And the largest obstacle for them is just simply getting them into a home, getting mm-hmm. them into stable housing, so they could start stabilizing their lives. Some of them get back into the workforce, but a lot of them, the best thing that can happen for a lot of them is to be in a situation where they have some stable housing, so they can stabilize their lives.
Okay, well, let's keep. Actually, we're going to go a little bit out of order, Linda. If you don't mind pulling the mic on over again, Linda Ketchum, who's been our guest here at least a couple of other occasions, is the executive director of the. The full title is officially
Madison Area Urban Ministry.
Madison Area Urban Ministry. And it's emum.org is your website.
That's it. E-mum.
Little things like that. And could you tell us a little bit about the work that the Urban Ministry does in this area?
Sure. We are an interfaith social justice agency. We've been around for 36 years. And historically, we had always focused on areas related to poverty, affordable housing, homelessness, racism, education. In the late 1990s, worked together collaboratively with other agencies in promoting funding, public funding for supportive services for people who are homeless, people with mental illness. And in the late 1990s, we realized all of those issues converge when we start to talk about what Wisconsin has done with incarceration rates and throwing more and more men and women into prison for nonviolent offenses and failing to recognize or hiding our head in the sand the reality that 90% of those people will return to the community. And so we have worked to assist people in rebuilding their lives as they reenter the community. We see housing as a huge piece of that. The ability for someone to find stable housing in the community is crucial if we expect them to find a job, if we expect them to be able to access other services they might need, whether it's drug and alcohol, mental health services. So we see the potential for a huge ripple effect based on the city's actions in terms of public safety, as people who are returning to the community from prison as well find it even more increasingly difficult to find housing, maintain housing, and to access services. We're also concerned about faith communities and other nonprofits that own rental properties that they rent to nonprofits who are also under scrutiny by the city assessors in the city of Madison.
Okay. And if you could pass the mic on to Steve. Steve Verheiden is here, and he's with an organization called Adapt. Could you explain again a little bit about how you all relate?
Wisconsin Adapt is part of a national disability rights organization that was, well, we just had our 25th anniversary last year. And the Wisconsin Adapt itself, we can probably thank Tommy Thompson for giving birth to Wisconsin Adapt because he was the one that brought up some of the, well, rather, I don't know, Darwinian regulations relating to community-based services. So we formed to fight some things that Tommy Thompson had put into effect, and We've stayed in existence ever since. We're a nonprofit. We have different groups throughout the state of Wisconsin that vary in size. We have no real formal funding, so to speak, so we kind of survive. It's when you say grassroots, Wisconsin Adapt is about as grassroots as it gets. So our primary focus at the national level is deinstitutionalization and making sure that people are no longer forced into institutions. And I'll let Jason talk for a minute on institutional bias. So housing obviously is a key piece because, as was mentioned earlier, you can't get any services unless you have an address. Mm. So hence the importance of housing.
Mm-hmm.
So,
all right. And with that, let's bring Jason Glozier into the conversation. And
thank you, guys.
Yeah, if you could tell us a little about what Steve was alluding to in terms of...
Well, Steve mentioned that on the national level, we're working on deinstitutionalization. And what he means by that is we've gotten legislation introduced called the Community Choice Act, which would, in effect, end the institutional bias, which is the mandate that says that services are to be provided within a nursing home first and community-based services come second. So when things like this happen and services in the community are cut, people with disabilities are forced into institutions in order to receive the services that they could maintain in their home if they can pay for that affordable, accessible, integrated housing.
We had a guest on, remember, just a couple of weeks ago talking about just the general elderly housing and nursing home situations. Mm. I mean, he was quite clear that's, if nothing else, just from a financial standpoint, a real waste of resources. When people are able to live and to be able to manage their lives on their own, that's the way you want to go. Is it the same thing true here?
Right. About 10 years ago when we first started working on this deinstitutionalization issue, the Office of Management and Budget gave the bill a very poor markup and implemented the woodworking effect to claim that it would be less cost-effective to provide services in the community. Just recently, some people at the University of San Francisco had done a study that proves that it's about 3 times cheaper to provide services within the community than it is to provide them in an institutional setting.
And you've spoken to this already, but of course it's not just about that bottom line, but in terms of what's the best situation for someone with a disability, what kind of a living situation would be best?
Well, what kind of a living situation would be best for you, John?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, would you want to live in a community where you're loved and accepted for who you are and can be a contributing member to that society, or would you rather be locked away in a warehouse somewhere where you can't contribute, you can't get an education, you can't get employment, and you can't live on your own without government subsidies?
That's a great way to put it. I mean, the best way to answer a question like that is to put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Well, I just want to remind folks, if you're joining us a little bit late, again, this is Forward Forum here on Madison 1670 WTDY. And the subject for the remainder of the hour is to talk about affordable housing in Dane County in Madison. Actually, this is a crisis that affects people statewide. This is specific to something that's come up recently as a result of some court decisions, interpretations of the law that is potentially endangering the tax-exempt status of a lot of the organizations that provide nonprofit housing. And this is effects on just hundreds, potentially thousands of people in the county. And also some groups with special challenges. The elderly, anyone who is on a limited income or unemployed or underemployed in the current situation, and as we just discussing, people with disabilities. Anyway, something that everyone in the community needs to participate in. Do you want to make the pitch for participation?
321-1670 or *123 on your U.S. cellular phone. If you are outside of the area and you want to join in, it's 877-867-1670.
I should have asked you all this before, but are you in a place where you want to talk about exactly what's going to come down on Tuesday and some of the kind of the street theater, maybe more like methods that are going to come into play? Michael, do you mind responding to that?
Well, we're certainly going to be having we hope to have a large crowd at the Capitol, and we're going to be having speeches. We're going to be having speakers, and we're going to try and get everybody who attends to sign on to a very short petition. And it's not going to be a whole bunch of whereases. It's going to be a couple of brief sentences telling the governor and the legislature that they have to fix this now. And we will be bringing some tents up there. We're not going to be staying there just to demonstrate what will happen or what most likely will happen if a lot of these agencies have to get this property tax hit. We're seeing stories around the country already on the coast and in the south of tent cities being set up because people are losing their housing. And if these agencies aren't able to continue to provide affordable housing for low-income families and low-income individuals and people with disabilities, we will see the same thing here. So that is the point that we're trying to drive home with this rally. And the state has to start moving now. People have been talking about this issue for years. These court cases have been winding through the system. So everybody knew we would be in this situation a long time ago, and the state has to act now.
Give us a little background on this, the whole situation. I'm not too familiar with the nonprofits and the tax exemption they were getting and how that applies to maybe a church, and maybe our listeners aren't very aware. Give us a little background on this whole situation.
Certainly. I'll try to give like the 90-second version.
Sure, it's extensive.
It's quite complex. But mm-hmm. ever since Wisconsin came into being in the 1800s, the state has granted property tax exemption for certain nonprofits for the services for their properties because of the services that they provide, with the understanding that it's better to provide this property tax exemption and let the agencies and let these associations provide what the state isn't willing or the state isn't really best able to provide. And it's worked quite well. And the rent use exception, which is how we're talking about it now, has been something that that agencies like mine and other nonprofit developers of affordable housing have been using it for over 30 years. And we've been using it to develop properties. As I said, you know, since 93, Housing Initiatives has been able to purchase, because of this, 51 units that we now own and operate and house clients in. The city of Madison and sometime back went to court with a company called Future Madison that provides affordable housing throughout parts of Madison around the Troy Drive area, Wexford Ridge neighborhoods, and the Darbo-Worthington neighborhood. And that court case was resolved in the city's favor back in September, saying that the city could assess these units and assess them for property tax. As a result of that, the state of Wisconsin's Department of Revenue issued a letter in October of last year, just a month after that ruling, narrowly defining the rent use restrictions. And as it stands now, it's showing it gives the municipalities the green light to go ahead and start assessing a lot of these agencies like ours for property taxes. As a matter of fact, we had a visit to our offices on the north side of Madison. We have our offices in a building that also has 9 rental units, all of ours. And the assessor's office came by and measured the building last Tuesday. So they're very serious about this. Madison is moving pretty quickly, unfortunately, to start to determining what is to be taxed and what isn't to be taxed. And some numbers have gone around as to how many units this may affect. The number that's most commonly referred to is about 1,700 units in Madison alone. Now, our agency, as I said, owns 51 units. We could be looking at a property tax bill of upwards of $70,000. So you translate that to 1,700 units in Madison alone, and then throughout the state, the thousands and thousands of units and people who are being housed, and then you could see the large effect that this that not acting is going to have. So that's why we're certainly acting as though this is a crisis, because it certainly is.
Steve, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yes, the disparate impact of this is just, it's phenomenal because tax credits have been one of the biggest tools that developers have used to increase affordable, integrated, accessible housing. Hopefully it's accessible and integrated for our point of view, but it is the biggest tool. I mean, in Section 8, all the other tools that historically people hear of, you know, to get housing they can afford or at least some pay only 30% of their income towards housing, none of those have been increased in many, many years due to recent federal administrations. There's been no money coming down. And it's as the key tool when you start knocking out the main tool to provide affordable housing, which this does, it's the impact is going to be quite phenomenal. And the ripple effect from this, as Mike talked about, the lack of services out because the rent restriction cuts to whether or not it's the tax credit is actually be going towards just maintaining the housing or whether it's being used for other services.
We're going to need to take a break in just a second. But one thing I did want you to expand on a little bit is this notion. I think, first of all, it sounds like a lot of this is based on narrow interpretations of the law, perhaps a law that wasn't constructed well or broadly enough in the first place, some other things. So a lot of it's a technicality. It's not that there are thousands of people out there asking that this thing be taken away. And as you were alluding to, Michael, it's something that people have known was coming down the road, but unfortunately nobody had the foresight to be able to push it forward. But Steve, one of the things we talked about earlier is what you're talking about, that also the law is drafted in such a narrow way that some of the supportive services that are really important to making housing accessible and livable for people, especially people with disabilities, ironically aren't necessarily covered, and potentially people are getting penalized or removed, or these complexes are getting removed because they provide these services that are just essential.
Yes, that's correct. And it's amazing because the federal Supreme Court just finally declared that a lot of tax credit units have to comply with Section 504 of the Rehab Act. So Section 504 of the Rehab Act, which requires certain percentages of tax credit developed housing to comply with, you know, the 5% rule of 5% be accessible, 2% be built to meet the needs of people with other sensory impairments, such as, you know, blind, visual impairments, those sorts of things. So, I mean, we've got, I'm going to let Jace talk about Olmstead and the impact of it on Olmstead.
Okay. And we will get to that in just a second. Steph? And welcome back to Forward Forum. John Quinlan here with
Stephanie Woods.
Discussion for the remainder of this hour is about affordable housing in Madison and Dane County and potential development here that could endanger some of that housing, both in the short term, over the longer term. To cut to the punch, essentially what's needed is some changes in state law that will undo some recent court decisions, some interpretations of that law that mean that a lot of the providers of nonprofit housing will have to pay enormous amounts in taxes that both will have consequences for the organizations that provide that, but obviously consequences for the people who live there. And so we have in studio Linda Ketchum from the Madison Urban Ministry, Steve Ryden and Jason Glozier from the disability rights group ADAPT, and Michael Bassford from Housing Initiatives, provider of housing primarily for people with mental illness. And we'd like to hear from all of you. Give us a call, 321-1670, U.S. cellular phone users toll-free, *123. Or if you're calling from outside the area, 1-877-867-1670, toll-free. Steph, do we have a caller on the line?
We do. We've got Dean in Madison. You're on Madison 1670.
Hi. I've been working with all three of them on this issue. Just wanted to call and offer my support that, you know, in a situation like this, what we're going to be doing is lobbying Tuesday, and we're going to be lobbying and showing the legislators, lobbyists, that they don't normally see. There's no poor people's lobby. They're used to seeing people with fancy suits and getting a lot of money donated to their re-election campaigns, but we're not going to do that. We're just going to go there and lobby that they do the right thing on this. So I just wanted to offer my support for what those three are talking about there.
Hey, Dean, one thing, not to put you on the spot personally, but one thing I've heard you speak about very eloquently is some of your own experiences in terms of times when housing stability for your family, for yourself, wasn't there. What kind of impact does this have on somebody when where you're going to live is in doubt? Is it maybe for some of the folks affected by this?
Yeah. It's unbelievably stressful. You don't know where you're at. And you can put some things together, and you're scrambling all the time. And you don't have a whole lot of time to go talk to legislators who you have to spend too much time with them before they get it. There's a lot of people at the state legislature that get this issue, but a lot of them are clueless. And it's not that they haven't had time to discuss this and get themselves familiarized with it. But what's going to happen if this isn't changed is going to devastate a lot of people's lives. And what they collect in property tax from these buildings, they're going to have to pay out a whole lot more in services to deal with the problems that are going to be resulted from this thing.
Well, Dean, hey, thanks so much for weighing in today.
Okay, thanks.
Linda Ketchum, you know, Dean's talking about an important aspect of this that we're going to be talking about throughout the hour, and that's the self-empowerment aspect that people directly affected by this, whether it's because of income or disability or other life circumstances, are out there, as Dean says, advocating for themselves, being visible in ways they haven't before. But this isn't just an issue that affects those people directly involved. It affects all of us, and I know you're part of alliances and coalitions that bring that into the fold.
Well, it does affect all of us, and I think Dean raises an excellent point, which is the city of Madison, none of the municipalities that are looking at doing this, the state has not thought through the broad implications of what they're doing. There's no plan to address the increased homelessness, and we already know through the Community Development Block Grant Office and their report from 2008 on homelessness that homelessness in our county is up. It's already up, and now we're looking at effectively eliminating, because we've decided it's appropriate and okay because of an interpretation of the law to raise tax revenues on the backs of nonprofit providers, ultimately meaning we've once again turned to people who are living in poverty, people with disabilities, people who are disenfranchised as a way of balancing our budget. So again, those inherent inequities in our system are still there, And Dean's right. We're going to be there Tuesday lobbying, and we don't care about using the term. It's what we're doing, and we have a right to do it. We have a right to be there. Everyone has a right to be there, and I think it really comes down to a question of what kind of community do we want to live in. And certainly, we can look at all sorts of legal interpretations over the history of this country that were morally reprehensible and morally and ethically wrong, but the powers that be wanted to uphold them. And so I don't see really how this is any different. It's a bad interpretation. It's going to have broad-range negative effects on the community. And I hope everyone listening, I hope everyone who's read anything about this is going to be there Tuesday lobbying, making their voice heard about what kind of community, what kind of state we want to live in.
Well, while we want to concentrate on the bigger messages that you're talking about there, I guess just, again, for folks trying to figure out kind of the spaghetti mess of how we got into this position, you know, probably folks have some inkling that things have come down, Michael, at the Common Council and level here in Madison. So my understanding is essentially that the city, again, as you explaining, had entered into this lawsuit. And if, you know, the city attorney says essentially it's something he had to undertake, and that along the way this broad sweeping decision got put down that had an effect on all kinds of other folks. What response has the mayor, the Common Council, tried to have to that? What role has the city attorney played in all of this?
Well, I don't know if I'm smart enough to be able to adequately explain why the city assessor's office and why the city attorney felt that they had to go down this path. The mayor has said, you know, he can't tell his city attorney how to interpret the law, and he can't tell his assessor's department how to interpret the law, and says that he wants a resolution to this matter. But, and I'm trying to be as careful as possible about how I'm saying.
You're doing very well.
He's sending somewhat mixed messages. And what we really need from the mayor is to act more like the Common Council, who twice in the past month has shown real leadership on this issue. First by when the first appeal came to try and delay rejecting the appeal for some of these properties. That was overturned by the city attorney's office again. I can't even begin to fathom why they decided to go that route. And then at the last meeting earlier this week, they showed real leadership in directing the mayor and the city's lobbyist and showing them the way, showing them what exact resolution that they want. And they want a resolution that's the same as everybody else at this table. They want to see these property tax exemptions restored, and the Common Council should certainly be congratulated for that stance.
Well, I can say it because at this point, although I do join the Equal Opportunities Commission this week, which has some implications. We're asking the mayor to do is not to get out of this situation being so bogged down in the technicalities of Common Council. You should be listening to your city attorney. Instead, say the prime issue here is this loss of affordable housing. Get engaged in that. Turn up the volume on that lever instead of getting involved with this other stuff and show some you're asking leadership there, I think.
Absolutely.
So is Steve Ryan?
Yes. Yeah. As Linda mentioned earlier, I think it's a classic battle of who is going to get taxed, who is not, where is the money going to come from. And I was reading Gotta Get a Life. I was reading the legal background on some of this information, and I couldn't help but notice the way the city attorney had phrased some of the questions, and we're arguing that the tax credit should be allowed to provide other services that keep the housing going. Basically that's the goal, I would think. But some of the questions that were asked, when asked of the state Supreme Court, does the phrase construction debt retirement mean only debt incurred to initially construct a property, implying that payment of other debt retirement is not meant to be included? I mean, let's answer the question that we're asking here.
Such a good attorney that he went way beyond
there,
and there are these other implications.
And there's a couple other examples like that in the legal background sheet. So, I mean, depending on... that's one of the nice things about not having any money. We probably never will have any, but you could ask questions like that and make statements like that. But if you read through that, some of the phrasing, that isn't exactly what I would call pro-community services.
Not very user-friendly.
Yeah.
I got lost in there somewhere.
Yeah, but I guess it loses something if you're not looking at it, but it certainly seems to answer the question in the way that a pro-tax the nonprofits would answer it.
So. And Linda Ketchum, so the city has met with you all on this to a certain extent, including with Michael May. And I guess essentially what I'm hearing him saying is, hey, Madison's taking the lead on this and we're doing the best we can. And compared to other cities, it sounds like from what we're hearing here, though, if that's the case, we're in a lot of trouble. We got a lot more work to do.
Well, it gets into those technicalities. What's the definition of is? But I guess it depends on what's the definition of leadership, because there is no other municipality in our state that is pursuing these nonprofits as aggressively as the city of Madison right now. And so, we've taken a lead. I don't know that it's the lead we want to be. I mean, I kind of equate it. We look at – there's all sorts of kinds of first places we don't want to be. First place in racial disparities of incarceration. Do we want to be the first city to tax nonprofit housing providers out of business willingly increase homelessness? I don't think that's where we want to be.
So is this an issue that Milwaukee, Green Bay, Wausau, other common councils are facing right now? Are they in the same place or what?
Well, and others can jump in. What we heard at the brown bag lunch that meeting that was held a few weeks ago where the city attorney, the city assessor's office were there, a number of council members and other and many of the nonprofits were there. Though there are communities considering this, but to the best of my knowledge, no one else has gone to the extent and as far and as quickly as the city of Madison has on this issue.
Yeah. I think we need to take our next break. Again,
I just want to say thank you, Linda, for putting that in English.
That's an interesting challenge throughout this discussion, but no, I think we got the issue kind of hammered down there. We want to talk about coming into the next segment and get specifically more of the implications, especially for the disability rights movement, for folks who have worked for accessible housing, for equality of access, and that includes having the services that are needed to be able to provide quality housing, some of the other implications of this in the bigger picture. Before we do that, just in case folks missed it earlier, Mike, can you give us again the lowdown on what's coming down this Tuesday?
Absolutely. We're going to be holding a rally at the state capitol at the King Street entrance right under the governor's office at noon on Tuesday, and we are going to just to tell the governor and the state legislature that the time to act has passed and they've got to make this change to the interpretation of the law so that we can retain our property tax exemption status.
And welcome back to Forward Forum. John Quinlan here.
With Stephanie Woods.
And again, for the remaining 13 minutes or so of the hour, discussion is affordable housing, how to maintain it here in Madison-Dane County and statewide. There is a danger out there given recent court decisions, actions by the city of Madison, need to clarify state law. Otherwise, a lot of the people that are doing great work providing affordable housing for many people from all kinds of walks of life those housing units are now in danger because they may soon go on the tax rolls. And we're talking about tens of thousands of dollars unexpected expenses and potentially something that could either force rents – well, actually, we can find out about it in a second. Force people into a situation of potentially losing that housing. And I just wanted to get a clarification as we move back in, actually reintroduce the panel quick. We've got Linda Ketchum from Madison Urban Ministry, Steve Verriden, and Jason Glozier from the disability rights group ADAPT. And Michael Bassford from the
Housing Initiative.
Sorry. and Michael, one of the clarifications you were making is part of what went with this tax exemption was the inability for an organization like yours to be able to raise rents. And that's still going to be there, right?
Well, not exactly. The inability to raise rents is not because of the property tax exemption status. The inability to raise rents is due to the fact that a lot of our funding comes from the federal HUD.
Uh-huh.
And the programs that we are a part of, say that we cannot raise our rents over a certain level. Now, if we were a regular for-profit landlord, whenever there is anything that affects our bottom line – and affects our operating expenses, all we would have to do is just move that increase back to the tenants, raise the rents, tell the tenants, hey, we got to raise the rents because our expenses have changed. If we lose this property tax exemption and are suddenly faced with upwards of a $70,000 property tax bill, we can't turn around to our tenants and raise their rents. HUD prohibits us from doing that and prohibits a lot of these other agencies and developers and landlords as well. So we're going to have to make that up out of our own operating expenses, which we haven't budgeted for. And that's going to mean that we may have to cut staff. We may have to provide services for less people. We may have to sell buildings. We're faced with a whole host of choices, none of them good, and all of them have a very terrible effect to the population that we're serving.
I need to play devil's advocate for a second here. For people who don't understand, and I always want to bring up the other side because I work with a lot of people who don't see the progressive side. Why is this important? Why should we provide affordable housing? I know that's something I would be asked in a heartbeat.
Well, we as the community in these cases aren't providing the housing. The agencies are, and
right.
And we as the agencies do receive some benefit from the property tax exemption and from other programs. And the reason is very simple. If we're not providing it, it's not going to be there. And these people, our clients who have severe mental illnesses, they will be left out on the streets. Mm-hmm. They'll be winding up in hospitals, winding up in jails, and otherwise. And a large percentage of our population has alcohol and drug abuse issues. They will, you know, without this stabilization, they are going to be, you know, they will be more society's problem than than their caregivers.
Jason, I promise we'll get to you in just a second. Stevie, I think you had something you wanted to.
I just have to say that once I got myself out of a nursing home, I went to college, I lived in accessible housing for about 6 to 7 years. It was affordable, subsidized. I got a job. I moved out. I own a home now, and I pay property taxes.
Okay.
So all in all, it's better for everybody.
Up, yes.
Exactly. The hand up.
Steph, I think we've got a caller.
We do. We have got Paul on the east side. You're on Madison 1670.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good. What's going on, Paul?
Well, the thing is that the last guy that just talked there, you know, he pulled himself up and he got himself out of the rut, and that's to be commended. The only problem is that there's a vast majority of these people that have no desire to ever pull themselves up, and they want to just live off of the rest of us indefinitely. And I think there needs to be some system set up. It's kind of like these people that get this electrical assistance every winter or whatever, and we know that there's widespread abuse, and the next cold winter we just need to turn it off.
Paul,
I mean, at some point you have to let people quit abusing you.
Paul,
you know, these people are not the only ones that are being abused. Some of the there's so much corruption and people abusing the system that a lot of us out here, we're tired of it.
Paul, if we take that as a given, that there is some abuse in the system, what about
that's
the person?
There's a lot of it. I mean, I believe,
Paul?
I've lived in states with the welfare people. These people are laughing at all of us in the face.
I want to try something with you nonetheless, though. For the people who do legitimately need this stuff, can you put yourself in someone's shoes? Imagine that because of an accident or something else, for example, that you have a disability, you have
sure.
a need for that kind of help. And would you want that available?
Yes, we need to help those folks.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm saying that there's so much abuse out there, and I don't think there's enough oversight to weed out the chafe. I'm saying when you find out that there's people abusing the system, you cut the apron strings and you let them go live wherever they please. They can go live down in the stream. I mean, it doesn't matter to us.
Okay.
But if you genuinely need help, we'll help you.
Paul, thanks for your question. Let's get a response here.
Well, Paul touched on something that I hear quite a bit, and that, well, that not only are people abusing the system, but there doesn't seem to be much oversight for where the money is going. And I could tell Paul, and I could tell anybody else out there that wants to bring that up, that most of my job as a program director at Housing Initiatives is involved with government oversight. I mean, I'm meeting with people from the city, the county, the state, and the federal governments on a regular basis. They're coming by and they're auditing our programs. They're coming by and they're checking our books. And they're coming by and they're making sure that the money that they provide, the taxpayers' money, is being spent wisely. And I think that we meet that standard very well.
I'd offer anecdotally, too, just as somebody who worked in public housing for several years. I know a lot of what the housing specialists spent their time on was chasing down incidents of fraud. And people are prosecuted. They do treat this seriously. They treat it seriously partly because the need is so great and we want to make sure that the money's going to the right places. But I think that's painting with a very broad brush to say that people don't care about the abuse when it occurs. And again, it's missing the central point of the thousands of people who really do have legitimate need. We do want to, our remaining minutes kind of shift gears slightly and again, focus in on disability rights. And Jason Glosier, I knew you had some thoughts, just kind of historic, you know, perspective for all of this. There have been decisions that have been the result of a lot of activism that have said something about the need for people to have access to decent housing. Could you talk about that a little bit?
Well, yeah, Paul touched on it very well, actually, and it's a fantastic segue. Because the fact of the matter is that SSI, the general income for people with disabilities, still puts most of those people at 20% of the poverty level. You know, these are people who, without affordable, accessible housing, would be priced out of even the cheapest one-bedroom or two-bedroom apartments. In a past study, it was actually proven that 34% of the market-rate apartments in as far as studios and one bedrooms, were out of the price range of people on SSI income, meaning that they would have nowhere to live. And this tax exemption leads to another major issue, and that's kind of a slap in the face to the Olmstead decision. And Wisconsin's been pretty flippant about doing that lately. They don't have a state plan for it.
And the Olmstead decision essentially is?
It's a decision that says – it's a federal Supreme Court decision that states that segregating people by institutionalizing them is a direct – is directly in defiance of the ADA, basically. And this housing tax crisis does that. You know, without this exemption – people who are on SSI income would be forced into institutions because they have nowhere to receive community-based services. And like I had mentioned before, with the institutional bias, they can't be designated as homeless because they have a place to go where they'll be able to receive services and have a roof over their head.
And I hope he doesn't think we're picking on it, but for a taxpayer like Paul, that's got implications in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. That means that, that money is being paid out greatly in excess of what's being paid out now.
Well, it does, but I can tell you that based on all the studies in the past 5 years, it proves that providing services like this in the community not only decreases the crime rate, but costs less than providing institutional care, mm-hmm. be it in a nursing home, in a jail, or providing it in a homeless shelter.
Oh, absolutely. We're down to just about our last 3 or 4 minutes. Time always flies. Linda, did you have some final thoughts off of all of this? Linda Ketchum from Madison Urban Ministry.
No, I think other than just to reiterate what's been said, providing housing is for people is much less expensive to our community, both in terms of public safety and in terms of tax dollars. To provide housing rather than having an overflowing shelter system, having an increasing crime rate, an increasing incarceration rate, we've got that mastered anyway. We don't need to put more people in prison for being essentially below the poverty limit or line in our community. And I would say also to Paul, and I don't know Paul, but for those of us who are people of faith, who profess a belief, and in my particular case a Christian, I would simply say go to Matthew 25.
Okay. Steve, we're riding. One other thing we wanted to mention at the end here is, you know, again, it sounds like it's going to be a great example of community organizing involving people directly involved, involving the larger community. But, you know, sometimes those of us maybe in older generations are concerned that there's nobody to pick up the ball. What do you feel about that?
Well, that's been, I know for National Adapt, it's been a major issue is who is going to pick up the ball when, you know, us old folks, you know, can no longer do it. Lord knows I can't put in the hours I used to be able to put in. And fortunately, we've got Jason here picking up the ball and doing a pretty good job of running with things here with Wisconsin Adapt. But, you know, in a lot of areas and a lot of communities, not only a disability rights community and the civil rights area in general, that's a whole nother show there.
And I sure don't mean to discount it, but I mean, Jason, I think about our experience with the Midwest Social Forum, seeing so many young people there that are really active in disability rights struggles and other things. First of all, are you seeing some of that? And what would you say to the young person out there who's thinking about maybe coming on Tuesday or getting involved?
I would say come and get involved. It's extremely important. Housing is going to be an issue forever. There's never going to be enough affordable housing. There's always going to be people who want to tax it and want to take it away. And it's necessary for everyone to get involved at every level. And I think Steve's very right in a lot of ways that there aren't a lot of youth who are involved. I think there are a lot who are beginning to get involved, and I sure hope they keep doing it. But I think it's up to us who are involved to foster them along the way and see to it that the next generation after us is more involved than our generation is.
This group I was talking about that we're both involved with, the social forum movement, is very much sees things as related to each other, yes. Other social justice issues, other fights for civil rights. Does that ring true for this?
It does in very many ways. One of the other implications for the disability community is the fact that a lot of care providers who provide attendant care and in-home services to people are part of those low-income communities and part of those minorities who also rely on this housing. They have a very substandard level of pay. I actually think it's below living wage at this point. And if you take away housing, then not only are you taking it away from people with disabilities who rely on it, but the people who provide services to those people and the people who provide services to those people.
Michael Basker, in about 30 seconds, can you give us again the particulars of what's happening on Tuesday?
Tuesday at noon, rally at the state capitol, King Street entrance. If you can't make it, contact the governor's office and your legislators and let them know that you want to see the property tax exemption restored to the way it's been for decades. And if you live in the city of Madison, contact the mayor and your common council representatives and your alders. Thank your alders for their leadership and encourage them to continue to provide that.
More background on this whole issue is up on our blog off of forwardforum.net. Encourage you to come out. Linda Ketchum, Steve Verriden, Jason Glozier, and Michael Basford. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next week.